16. Cliff had handed him a problem from hell. How to stop the folk from killing a lot more of an alien species to intervene with big things Redwing had never seen, minds unknown, or else do nothing. Nothing looked like the right answer, but he didn't have to like it. He had the ship mind call up readings on this from the ancients available on the ship's database of all human cultures. These long-dead voices had never confronted any remotely similar problem, but came as close as humans could. St. Augustine, Spinoza, Churchill, Lao Tzu, Kant, Aristotle, Niebuhr, Gandhi, King, Singh. Interesting, thick reading, but it made him think about his life in perspective. Maybe he could use that if he survived this whole huge thing. But for now, alas, no help there. The best solution was to get Cliff's team out of that place. Then the folk would stop trying to capture or kill them. Bargaining could begin. The brief calm burst Cliff had managed to get through to Sunseeker, fighting through the electromagnetic haze screen the folk had put up, gave the cartoon files and some optical spectral data that fit Glory exactly. No question where it came from. It couldn't be a coincidence. The Glorians were sending the bowl a threat. But it used imagery of Superman, of all things, an antique superhero, he had to look the term up, from the expansionist phrase of the Anglo-Saxon era. Technically, of course, that era was not over. It had merged with the larger economic unification of Earthside. English was the obvious unifying language, larger, richer, with simple introductory grammar. Irregular verbs galore, of course, but by the time the interplanetary phrase of economic expansion was well underway, there was no competition. Mandarin, Cantonese, they came from a productive society, as did Hindi, but nobody could write them well, and they didn't work simply with digital culture anyway. Plus, the Chinese culture didn't have the flexibility of the Anglo structure. The other Asian cultures did a bit better, but English was as set into the world culture as the QWERTY keyboard. History ruled. So a comic book figure like Superman, his Pedia base said, fit with the modern social structure too. Other archetypes like Dracula, Sherlock Holmes, Frankenstein had clear roles, but fit uncomfortably with the world culture. The other superheroes of the Twensen were modeled on men like animals, bats, spiders, apes. Superman, tellingly, was an alien, yet he fit into human society seamlessly. Superman's key assumption was that his disguise was just to put on glasses and business clothes and be an everyman. Then nobody, even Lois Lane, a character that reminded Redwing of his ex-wife, could spot him. Every man a Superman. What could be more obvious? Do your job, toe the line, the daily grind. But all the time you are free to imagine yourself leaping over buildings, flying through the air, flattening the baddies, maybe even getting a date with Lois. Redwing shook his head. Cultures could best be understood in the rearview mirror. Superman might work among the multitudes of Earthside, but such guiding archetypes were not what you needed in deep space. The interplanetary culture spawned Smoke, Ellipso, White Thighs, and others. Such larger-than-life figures helped cultures understand themselves, turn their lives into stories. So, here among the worlds and stars, this was a frontier. Earthside hadn't had one in centuries. But the aliens spoke in that antique visual language. They must have used big antennas to pick up all sorts of popular media, broadcast over hundreds of years. Then, apparently, they finally saw the bowl headed toward them. So they sent a brush-off message, using the cartoons that swerved around language and slammed home the point. Aliens stomping on Superman, beating him up, kicks to his head and gut, the finishing glower straight into the viewer's face. Classic, in its way. Any chimpanzee would get that right away, even a smart one with a starship. They were intelligent, technological Glorians who knew something about images with power. And they didn't want the bowl to appear in their skies. Well, who would? It had immense mass and its own star in tow. It couldn't approach a planetary system without scrambling up planetary orbits. Coming to call meant the bowl comes into your china shop and is in no hurry to leave. A warning was understandable. Threats, comic book or not, might work. But no curiosity? No desire to embrace the strange, the alien, the obviously huge technology the bowl implied? What kind of aliens were these Glorians, anyway? Beth had said shakily, "I need to think about this," and departed. A sharp rap startled Redwing. He glanced at his desk, which pulsed with a reminder color. Carl had knocked smartly on the door, right on time. Redwing got up and met him, shaking hands as he did sometimes with crew to show this conversation was more than ordinary. After all, the close quarters and endless waiting led, in classic fashion, to rumors, imaginary problems, and endless speculation.
"I carried forward those points you brought up," Carl began.
"You're done integrating the new crew?"
"Nearly. They're slow, dazed. Some sleep pods didn't work just right, it seems."
"Anything serious medically?"
"No, just slow recovery rates."
Carl looked tired. Redwing knew that rumor-mongering went double for the newbies. Some of the freshly revived had the checked-my-actual-personality-at-the-door look of people absorbing and not able to react. It was a surprise, yes. Not glory on the view screens, but an immense, whirling landscape. Redwing had decided to let them get into the work cycle, then get to know them, see what teams he could shape from them. Dealing with the bowl to get what Redwing wanted was going to be a complex game. They needed supplies of volatiles and fusion fuel catalysts just to depart and head for glory. That was only the beginning, though. Best to get things back on firm ground. He leaned forward, hands clasped on the desk.
"You and I need to have a clear understanding of how the dynamics of this bowl and star system work. It may be the only leverage we have over the folk."
"They've been running this place for a very long time," Carl said. "I doubt it has any vulnerabilities."
"Start with that jet. You'd think they'd have reached cruising speed and been able to shut off the plasma jet by now, but never mind that.
They can't."
Redwing looked skeptical. He liked playing this role, letting crew educate him and tumble out their ideas. While a lower-ranking officer dealing with the myriad specialists a ship needed, he had learned that you could get to the point much faster this way. These were tech types first, and crew members a distant second.
Maybe they can't.
Carl rose to the bait.
"Look, a grad student can show that the bowl isn't statistically stable. I know. I checked with the ShibMind non-linear analysis, and I'm just an engineer."
"Why not?"
"The bowl's not in orbit around the star. Turn off the jet, the star draws it in by gravity. It hits the star."
"So the jet has to stay on?"
"This whole thing is dynamically stable, not static. Same as we are when we walk. We take a step, fall forward, catch ourselves. Only way to get anywhere."
"So what makes the whole star and bowl scheme work?"
Redwing had a hunch, but he liked to check it against somebody who really knew. It helped the intuition. Carl was just the type he needed.
"The jet comes off that glaring hot spot. The bowl reflects a lot of the star's own sunlight on that spot, making the corona far hotter than you ever see on the surface of a star. Somehow, here's the real magic trick, the star's own magnetic field gets wound up in that spot. Notice the star's spinning, so it generates magnetic fields deep in its core, a dynamo. That leaks out, forms the whole region dominated by the fields, the magnetosphere, and that hot spot draws field lines in, wraps them around the jet as it forms. Then the field takes off with the incredibly hot plasma, trapping that pressure in a wraparound, like rubber bands. And it all escapes the star. The magnetic field lines wrap around the plasma like tight invisible fingers, squeeze it, make it spurt out. The jet carries forward, slim as you like, straight for the knothole, and passes through. The jet thrust makes the whole damn thing move forward, star and bowl and all."
"So?"
Redwing knew he could appear incisive by just asking the obvious next question, interrupting the headlong spinning out of a whole complex story. It worked.
Carl blinked, seemed to come out of his techno days.
"So, the magnetic fields hit the bowl's fields."
"What fields?"
"The bowl's a huge conductor, spinning fast, with electrical currents running in it. It makes its own magnetic fields. I checked the lander data from when the teams went down. Strong fields even at the top of that deep atmosphere. Keeps cosmic rays away, sure, but its real reason is—"
Carl blinked again and sensed he was going into lecture mode.
Redwing just nodded.
Keep him anxious but focused, his old cycle ship commander had said. They never really notice you're leading them.
Carl slowed. The bull mag fields, they catch the fields from the jet. I've got plenty of mag depth photos of this. The bull shapes the jet and binds to it both. That links the bull to the star.
Of course, gravity's making the bull want to fall toward the star. After all, it's not in orbit or anything, just spinning around.
But it can't fall into the star. There's a sort of dance between them. The star is running away, thanks to the steady push it gets from the jet. So the bull is chasing it. To make the ride less bumpy, the system has those nice magnetic fields acting like rubber bands you can't break. See, magnetic fields always form closed loops.
Why?
Even Redwing knew this, but it was best to throw the occasional bone.
Old Doc Maxwell, it's the law.
So, Carl jumped right in, as Redwing had known he would. The fields massage the bull, cushion minor excursions smooth out the ride.
So the folk can't turn it off, ever.
Do that, the bull crashes. I estimate it'll take about a year to fall into the star. I'd love to see it. Gotta be spectacular.
But it can't happen because of the jet. So, how do we screw around with it?
Carl blinked yet again, twice. But why?
We have people down there. Must be billions of smart aliens on the bowl, too. We have to make a deal to get our people back, to get on to glory.
Carl looked at the bowl view sliding by on the wall. Forest land now, dotted with twinkling small seas, white caps outlining some where a strong wind blew down from somber gray mountains.
They've been safe for millions of years, longer.
How long?
I don't know.
But to make something like this, you have to have some large-scale ambition in mind.
Redwing looked skeptical.
Touring the galaxy?
Well, you get a permanent suntan, yes, Carl grinned, and never get cold.
Redwing nodded. Never get cold. Maybe a motive? Not just a small thing like going interstellar, but never leaving your home?
Carl thought a while, and Redwing led him. When Carl spoke, it was a whisper.
Taking a whole culture, a world, so many species, on a ride that could last forever. Not just colonizing some planet, an eternal voyage. It's got to be it.
Redwing shrugged.
Over millions of years, your own species has got to change. Maybe go extinct.
The whole thing will go unstable if you don't have somebody to do the tweaks, keep watch, fix accidents.
For sure. Then there's cultural change, but you can't let the society decide the whole bold experiment is a bad idea. Then you die.
Carl hadn't thought this way. Engineers don't, he mused, and then recalled that his 3 degrees were in electrical, mechanical, and astroengineering.
Okay, usually.
Look, Carl, a few 100 years ago, we called people savages because they pierced their ears, ballooned their lips, wore trinkets in their nose, cut their hair so it looked wild or had no hair at all. They did weird stuff, had strange, noisy dances and rites, and tattooed their bodies. Then when I was growing up, everybody called that stuff hip and fashionable.
So?
The lands below were back to mountains and seas. Beautiful expanses, larger than the whole Earth-Moon system. Redwing never tired of it all.
We can take cultural change, even stuff that comes back from our ancestors and looks odd. But we're expanding, moving out into the stars.
Well, sure.
And so are the folk. I guess they can take tattoos, it's fashion, which means it's over by the time people like us even hear about it. But I doubt they can take big new religions or political mobs that want to, say, take over piloting this contraption. They can't allow that.
Carl got it. He nodded eagerly.
And we thought we knew what conservative meant.
They can't risk the wrong kind of change. And that's exactly what we new kid on the block humans represent.